Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runner, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by Ironman U. Run Catalina.com. Catalina Marathon coming up on Saturday, March 19th by EverySite.com, the coolest new technology around. By our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we've raised over $70 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. And, of course, you can check out any of our interviews on iTunes or on Babbittville. Our next guest, she's been on the cover of ESPN and Runner's World magazine, author of In a Single Bound, Ironman finisher, marathon record holder for single above knee female amputees, Paralympic hopeful, star of the Amazing Race, Sarah Reinertsen. Sarah, how the heck are you?
Hi, Bob. How are you tonight?
How do you like having your whole life flashing before you in 4.5 seconds?
It's awesome, actually.
You're like, wow.
Yeah,
that's a lot of stuff.
That's me?
Oh, wait. What's he talking about? He's got somebody else. So how you doing? You good?
I'm great.
So,
yeah.
So take me back. Obviously, this is a different era, but take me back to growing up as a above-knee amputee in an era when really kids with amputation was very people weren't used to seeing little kids missing limbs.
Yeah, you know, I'm a child of the 70s, and when I grew up, I didn't see people with disabilities on television, in magazines, I mean, doing sports and pushing the limits. And, you know, that was a tough thing, I think, because, you know, being a kid with a disability, like, disabled kids aren't different than kids who don't have challenges, you can see. You just want to play, and you want to do sport. And, you know, because we didn't have those examples, a lot of the, you know, there were some adults in my life who didn't really understand that that was fundamentally the same, that I still wanted to be an athlete and that I still wanted to play, and I was often excluded. But, you know, I was very lucky that I did find some role models eventually, and I had, my parents were amazing people that, you know, despite not having Google as a reference tool, they just knew in their heart that, you know, our daughter might have challenges, but we're gonna treat her like any other kid, and we're gonna encourage her to be as active as possible. So you know, I really credit the woman I am today for having a really strong foundation at home.
So when you got into sport, and I know there was one woman in particular, I think it was Patty, who, mm-hmm. who was a runner as an amputee, and she changed everything for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, that's why I mentioned the role models is my first thing, because I think you often need to have that example, right? Like every kid watching television, you know, whether it was Michael Jordan or Serena Williams or Kobe Bryant or, you know, Michael Phelps. I mean, there is someone that you aspire to. Now, that kid may not end up going to the Olympics, but just, you know, trying to be like MJ, trying to be like Serena or Michael Phelps, you know, that inspires them to find their own greatness inside. And so without having a role model that looked like me, I think I really struggled to allow myself those dreams of dreaming, you know, those wild, fantastical dreams of going to the Olympics and so forth. So I felt very lucky that I happened to find this role model, this other amputee runner who was out there, you know, conquering distances on a prosthetic leg. And I happened to meet her at a 10K race. And once I saw her, it was like, wait a minute, I can be like her. I can do that. And honestly, it kind of goes back to my parents too, though, because my parents were weekend warriors. I never would have ran into this woman at this 10K if my dad wasn't the original role model in our household to teach me that fitness is important, signing up for those local 10Ks and getting out there. That's important for all people. And so, you know, he dragged me to this race, and that's when I met this woman, Patty, who changed my life. And because once I met her, it was like this domino effect. You know, Patty introduced me to Jim McLaren.
Yes.
And then Jim McLaren became my role model in Ironman. And it just, you know, evolved from there.
Is it something that it is that's always with you? Because I see you light up when you meet new people. Because to me, there's always something in the back of your head that says, this person might not know another amputee, and they might not know what's ahead of them. And I can be that person that Patty was for me.
Oh, absolutely. I feel like that's sort of my responsibility to be that. Yep. But for me, Bob, it's not just about the other people with disabilities. I'm just passionate about sport.
Right.
Like sport and triathlon has given me such, you know, it gives me more energy. It's brought so many good things into my life that I believe all people should find something where they're moving their body and they feel alive. So I get excited about inspiring people in sport, no matter whether they have a disability or not. You know, I run with a lot of able-bodied people, and I want to spark them to believe that they can do more and be more and be better. But especially we need to reach out to those populations that are underserved, and people with disabilities do have extra challenges and get there. I mean, and that's why, you know, I'm so passionate about the work that we do at the Challenge Athletes Foundation, because often the barrier for folks with disabilities to get involved is that piece of sports equipment or going to that first clinic where they're actually learning how to run or how to bike. I mean, for my story, I know I had my amputation in the 80s, and our health insurance coverage has only gotten worse. So, you know, I had a couple of sessions of physical therapy, and they didn't get to the sports part, right? They got you up and down the hallway and maybe up and down the stairs, but they didn't teach you how to run or how to figure out biking or skiing or skateboard, whatever you wanted to maybe do. The physical therapist didn't have enough time to get to that. And I find that's still the case today in 2016, that we have that same scenario where patients who are rehabilitating from disability, they don't have the same access to sports. So what CAF has provided in sort of clinics, support, and that piece of equipment, that running leg or that mono ski or that hand cycle, can be that one thing can totally change someone's life.
So it's one thing to become a runner, right? Track, and then you run the, you know, half marathon, marathon. But talk about the challenges of, because people don't understand, when I watch you run or Scout Bassett, other single above knee amputees, the imbalance between your, you know, the one leg and the other leg, it's like you're almost not hopping, but it's to me, the stress on your lower back has to be horrific. How hard is it when you're going those longer distances?
I call it, I have a little hitch in my get along.
That's
know?
Exactly like, it. That's what it is. It's a hitch. Exactly.
It's like a little, yeah. So it's a little hitch in my get along. You know, when you don't have that knee, that above knee amputation, when you think about going up the stairs, you know, you can even like lift your knee up and you see that power you're getting. I don't have that on the right side. So that makes it more difficult having that. I also run with a prosthetic knee. I use a total knee when I run.
Yeah.
And I also have a flex run running foot that I use there. And certainly the technology has gotten better. I mean, once I got that Oser running foot, I could it was so much lighter than my walking leg that I was able to cover the distance better. You know, my first three marathons I did on my everyday leg because the running leg wasn't even, like, invented yet.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
so
yeah.
I just used what I had. But once I got that equipment, it didn't give me a competitive advantage. It just helped me to sort of even the playing field a little bit. In some ways, I was sort of running the race in a pair of basketball shoes instead of a pair of running shoes. You know, that's kind of the analogy I make. You'd never want to wear this big, heavy basketball shoes for a marathon, you know, just as I really didn't want to wear my everyday leg, but that's all I had. I just used what I had. So with the technology, we can close the gap, but you still have to strengthen the rest of your body to be able to handle that leg. And certainly, I do have weaknesses that I have to even be tougher, stronger, better at. My low back is one of them. I do a lot of work on my core, you know, just ab work, because I know when I'm coming down on that prosthetic, which I love that carbon fiber, but I'm coming down on carbon fiber. I've got a little bit of a Nike sole cushion there, but it's not a lot of this, you know, I have a lot more shock reverberating up my back.
Yeah.
So that can really wear you down after, you know, when I first started running, it wore me down after a mile, you know, but once you start lengthening the distances, you've got to be even stronger, tougher, and have more endurance, because pounding on that carbon fiber for 26 miles, it can, if your muscles aren't ready for it, it's a shock. But that's not the same way for anybody, right? You got to do the proper training.
Really do. So when people talk about somebody having a lot of shoes in their closet, I'm imagining you've got a cycling leg, you've got a running leg, you got a walking leg. You probably have something for skiing. I mean, when somebody walks into your closet, what do they see?
I have a closet in my house that is just dedicated to my legs. And so I've got a bunch of them hanging from, like, the closet rod where you would put your clothes. I actually have my legs hanging off that, my running legs hooked on there, and extra running feet. And then I got one of those shoe things that you hook on to the closet rod, and normally you put shoes in the slots. I have all different feet in those slots, my high heel foot, my yoga foot, my beach foot that's okay for salt water and sand to get in it, and then my, you know, of course, my cycling leg. So I feel very lucky that I have so many legs, because that also is quite a luxury. I mean, your insurance will cover a walking leg, but they don't cover all these sports legs, and so this is not an average scenario for every amputee. So I do feel a little gluttonous, like Imelda Marcos or something, that I have all these, like, legs. But, again, it kind of goes back to CAF and why I'm so passionate, because I really want to use my career in sport to help other people get access to that technology.
So as a I always hate using the word pioneer, because it sounds like, you know, gosh, this person was there when the earth was cooling. But when you got in the triathlon as a, again, a single above knee amputee, you're living in New York City, and I'm guessing you didn't have, besides running, I think you were coming in with maybe ability to run, but could you ride a bike? Did you swim at all?
No, I mean, well, when I kind of started getting interested into triathlon, I mean, Jim McLaren was doing it, Paul Martin was doing it, Brian Lesky was out there, and there were a couple men that were doing it, but there weren't any women that I knew.
And those guys were all below knee, right?
Yeah, and they're all below knee amputees. Brian's actually an above knee amputee.
Okay.
He did an Ironman, and that, you know, that kind of planted. Mm. I had a lot of those BK amputee guys saying, I don't know if it can be done, but when I saw Brian especially do it on an above knee amputation, I was like, okay, I know it can be done. Even though I knew it in my heart, he was, again, a role model and example. I was like, if he can do it, I'm for sure I can do it. And but I came from a running background. I'd done 5 marathons, but I was a Marco Polo swimmer, didn't know how to ride a bike. I only rode an indoor spin bike, because I was afraid to ride the bike in New York City if you don't know how to ride.
Yeah.
So, I knew I could, just had to figure out those logistics, but that inspired me to do it. So I probably, you know, my first triathlon was in 2003, and that really, but once I did my first try, I was hooked. I was like, this is so much fun.
It's such a cool sport.
Yeah, and actually, Bob, you were at my first triathlon, and you were racked very near me at the Carlsbad Tri. That was my very first try, and I remember you kind of scared the crap out of me, because the surf that year, Carlsbad, was pretty ripping, and I just remember you saying, oh, my God, I've never seen surf so big at this race.
Never,
and I was like,
never.
Oh, no, what did I do? Why did I sign up for this?
Not since. That was like the year I was like, I was loving it. This big surf is great. unless you haven't been in it much. So you end up, what was the first Ironman? Was that 2004?
Yeah, my first Ironman. I mean, no, this is when I feel old, and I was like, oh, my God, that was over 10 years ago.
Yeah.
My first one was 2004 and failed at that attempt. I mean, I hate to use that strong word, but, I missed the cutoff. So, yeah, it was kind of a But it was.
I think you set a world record for the amount of times puking during the bike ride.
Oh, yeah. Lord bless NBC for not showing the puking, but I did puke quite a lot that day. It was like pedal, 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 puke, pedal, puke. And in some of that, actually, that was really about the fourth event at Ironman. It was my nutrition.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
I hadn't quite dialed that element out. So there's a lot to take on. I think we all sometimes watch the Ironman and we just think, I know I did. I just watched it and I thought, swim, bike, run, that's all you got to do. But there's a lot more involved.
Eating and drinking contest.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you missed the bike cutoff time that year.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being there, and that was a pretty emotional time for you.
Yeah, it was, it was upsetting. A lot of people around me said, look, you made the attempt, we're proud of you, that's it. But I knew that same day that I had to go back. I was not going to let this dream die. I mean, I was, 15 minutes over 112 miles, definitely felt like a gap I could close. And I knew, I think I always look at failure as in some ways can be like the best thing that ever happened to you, because the lessons you learn in your struggle or where you fell short, I mean, that's really where you learn the most. And I just knew that this was a lesson for me. And I learned from it. I fine-tuned my training. I changed my coach. My nutrition and my transitions.
Yes.
Some equipment. I got a bike. Cannondale made me a custom bike. I mean, I had some things that I tweaked that I knew would set me up for a better performance. If I had, the other thing is that you just never know what you're going to get on race day.
Right.
You know, like I just did a race on Sunday, really fun race here in Orange County, this Laguna Niguel tribe. But
pouring rain.
It was pouring rain, and there was mud all over the place, and, I wasn't at risk of finishing that, of course. I mean, I knew I'd finish, but what you get on race day can also challenge you, and that's why it's you got to be prepared, because you have to just know whatever comes your way, you've got to face it.
You mentioned getting a positive out of, making lemonade out of lemons. You got a lemon in 04, and then Cannondale comes on board, and I remember you going back to the factory to get your bike, and the entire company was on board for this unfinished business tour, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they made this bike, and I wanted red flames on it. It said unfinished business, but they had this banner that said unfinished business, Sarah Reinertsen, welcome to Cannondale, and everybody in the factory signed this banner.
Wow.
And I brought that banner with me to Kona, and we hung it on my friend's condo on their balcony that's on Ali'i Drive. So I actually saw it on race day when I was racing, and that was, I mean, I thought about all of those people when I was out on that course. Of course, when I'm looking down at the bike, I thought about them every time I trained. But I really did also carry those people from the factory with me. I mean, and I carried my friends at the Challenge Athletes Foundation with me. And those people who couldn't physically be there were still with me in my heart. And that gave me strength out there on the Queen K Highway for sure.
You had basically two victories that day. Number one, coming across the bike cutoff time, because I remember you getting off the bike and it was like, no, let me get across this line before you do anything here. Then I'll worry about changing my leg. You were like,
yeah.
And you had plenty of time.
I had my transition chair in front of the mat.
Yes.
I was like, wait a minute, I got to cross that mat.
Exactly.
I want to stop the time. I want the fastest bike split I can, it's in the record book, so.
And then the second win was coming along Ali'i Drive. And I just remember how strong you looked throughout that run. It is like there was a level of confidence that I don't know if I've ever seen in you before. I mean, you were so prepared for that day.
I remember, too, I carried this keychain around with me. A friend of mine had made it for me, and it had stamped the dream time, which I didn't tell a lot of people, right, because you never know what's going to happen on race day. But I had this dream time of 16:05. that I thought, like, I geeked out on the spreadsheets of, like, what I thought I could average on a bike, what I do on the swim. So I thought, 1605, that's my dream goal. And I carried this keychain around for a year. And I remember being out on the course and and I think you were even in that, in the car with them.
Yep.
And I was like, what time of day it is? Because, you know, you start to lose the plot. I mean, I had this, in those days, the garments were enormous, you know.
Right.
I mean, so I had this big garment on my hand, on my wrist, and I had all these other splits, but I didn't have the time of day on there. So I was just like, the math was like overwhelming me. It was like, what time is it? And I remember asking, you know, it was pitch black. You're out at the, energy station, right? So there's not very many street lights down there. And I just asked, I'm like, what time is it? And someone said, it's like, oh, it's like 8 o'clock. I was like, oh, my God. I'm like heading back almost, and it's like way earlier than I thought.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I am in really good shape. So I just – but that was, again, fuel to just keep pushing forward. And I also had – done a lot of, like, I just geeked out too on some of the Hawaiian culture and some of the words. And so one of my mantras was imua, which means move forward or forward on in Hawaiian. And I was just like, imua, you're going to get to Ali'i, just keep going. And I crossed that finish line in exactly 1505,
so
which I just think is amazing,
ahead.
You know?
Wow.
Like,
an hour ahead of your schedule. I love
an
that.
An hour ahead of my schedule. I'm like, and to be like that precise about it too, like not 1506, not 1504, it's like 1505.
That is so cool. So how did that change? How did being out, you're on the NBC show, it's 2 years in a row. I'm sure there was more recognition of Sarah Reinertsen after those two races than before. How did that change your life?
Yeah, you know what? It did change. It did sort of. I did become maybe a more well-known challenged athlete.
Yeah.
You know, and that was the icing on the cake. I think a lot of times I do get a lot of people who come sometimes say to me like, "Oh, how can I get sponsored by Nike?" And you know, a lot of stuff like that came after the Ironman, but I never did the Ironman to get the sponsorship. I truly did it just out of a joy and passion and desire to like do this mythical race called the Hawaii Ironman. The rest of it just happened to come. And if I hadn't gotten that, I would still be, you know, doing races and doing what I love because it's just like part of my DNA. So, I'm very grateful, of course. It's awesome that I have all this stuff, but it was unexpected, I guess, is my point. I never thought that it would catapult me. I mean, that's, I think, when I did get a lot of media coverage that year in 2005. I think there were like five or six different stations there covering it, which I never expected. And then I did get some endorsement deals and stuff, and it was just, but I've been racing in sports since I was 11 years old, and I was 30 at this point. So I had put in, you know, a good 20 years before anybody really paid attention or ever gave me a free pair of anything, you know?
So then from there, you end up in the Amazing Race, which is such a cool experience to travel the world like that. What was that experience like for you?
Oh, the Amazing Race. I have such fond memories of that. I mean, honestly, it was 20 times harder than Ironman because there's no end in sight. You don't know the course. They don't feed you on the course. But I loved that the Amazing Race, you know, you get to travel the world. I got to see things I would never perhaps get to see as a tourist. I mean, yeah, you can go to the Kuwait Tower in Kuwait, but they're not going to let you, like, climb on the side of it. Same thing for the, you know, the Great Wall of China.
Yeah,
I've gone to it, but they don't let you strap a rope to the side of it and scale it, you know? So I'm so grateful for those experiences. But I also loved, too, that I had this window of opportunity to kind of show the non-triathlon world or the non-sports world, you know, maybe the just that a girl with a disability or a woman with a disability can race with the best of them. And I did things, you know, that pushed me out of my comfort zone. Like, I am not comfortable with heights. I don't really love climbing. But it forced me to, like, to do it. I mean, of course, you know, I don't know if I would have forced myself to do those things if there wasn't a television camera and a contract that I signed saying I had to, you know. So I'm so grateful for that. And I now have a climbing harness, and I sort of love that I have a new interest because of that.
Being on that show, because you're talking, were you surprised at the number of people who recognized you from that show?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that show is like, 15 million viewers a week?
Yeah.
So it's a lot of people. And, you know, what really surprises me is that I still get recognized. I mean, I was on the show 10 years ago, and I still to this day have people ask me, are you the girl from The Amazing Race?
Wow.
And that's just, I think also, too, because I'm very identifiable with the leg.
Yes.
I mean, you start to forget faces on TV, and there's been so many other seasons since then, so it all starts to blur. But I think because of my prosthetic leg and I'm the short little blonde, girl, they're sort of like, wait, are you the one? And a lot of times it happens in airports. But I mean, it's happened all over the world. I remember being in Norway and I'm at the duty free to get my tax back from all the money I spent there.
Yeah, yeah.
And the lady at the duty free tax thing is like, are you the girl from The Amazing Race? I mean, I'm in Oslo Airport. Like, what? Yes, I am. But so that's what's surprising. I've gotten recognized in Australia and I mean, in far corners of the world, not just here in the U.S. So that surprises me that it still happens.
So as somebody who loves the sport of triathlon, and triathlon became an Olympic sport in 2016, mm-hmm. It's now in the Paralympics, which is huge for the sport. And I know that's a goal for you, right, to make the Paralympic team. And I know it's tough, right, because
yeah.
The categories have been shrunk. It's going to be tough to make the team, but how has this journey been, the fact that it's now a Paralympic sport?
Look, when I got into triathlon, I wasn't sure we'd ever be, a Paralympic sport. I mean, I remember I have a poster in my house from the 2000 games when triathlon was the first time it was in the Olympics, and I bought this poster in Sydney when I was covering the Paralympics as a journalist in 2000. I bought this triathlon poster because I was like, even before I was a tri geek, I was a tri fan, and I bought that poster, and it just never occurred to me that we would get into the Paralympics. But once I started seeing this movement build, and you saw more people with disabilities coming out to the ITU World Championships in 03, 04, 05, and there was this momentum, you know, we kind of all pulled together and lobbied to make that happen, and going to ITU and going to the IPC and Paralympics and you know, stating our case and petitioning and proving that we had the numbers internationally to do this. I mean, it's amazing. You know, I'm so proud of what a collective group of us together were able to make happen. The one thing for me that isn't great is that I'm doing the opposite of most triathletes, right? Most people go from the sprint or ITU racing, and then they do a half Ironman,
yes.
And then they do Ironman. I'm doing it backwards because in the Paralympics, it's a sprint triathlon. And so, you know, it's unusual to go from long distance Ironman racing to short course, and especially when you cross the 40 and over
yes.
line,
yes.
You know, it's a bit of a tall order. But, you know, I know I have to go for it regardless of what happens. I'm going to try because I've worked too hard for it to get there. I cannot, I can't walk away now. I've got to do my very best. And, you know, I really think much like when I did Ironman the first time, I've put together a team of people, around me that are coaching me and working with me. And I'm doing everything in my power, to see if I can make this happen for Rio. So.
That's pretty cool. And you're coached by the Ironman champion, Olympic silver medalist, McKeely Jones, who I'm sure is the most meticulous person in the sport forever. She's brought something to the table for you.
Oh, I have a total girl crush on McKeely Jones. She is just, I adore her. I love her. But and it's funny too because she was at the world my first world championships for triathlon in the Olympic distance, not an Ironman, but Olympic distance was in New Zealand. And I remember going up to her and being like, "Hi, my name is Sarah. I'm a big fan of yours," you know. And also she won, and because I was too shy when she won Carlsbad Tri the year we did it to like talk to her. But I finally got the courage in New Zealand to be like, "Hi, I'm a fan." But yeah, I mean, so now to have her as my coach, and she is very meticulous. Her training plans are awesome. She I feel so lucky too that I live within driving distance of her. So I get to meet her and go on bike rides, and I do runs and with her. And so it's not just giving me a program. I actually get to work with her and actually work out with her. So it's been awesome. I've learned so much. And I've got, like, you know, Southern California, you've got amazing programs here. I've got an awesome master's program. Nova Masters is just a phenomenal group, too. So I've really got some really good things in place. And, I can't believe that this triathlete champion, Olympic medalist, and Ironman champion, who I've always been a fan of, is now a friend and my coach.
I love that. So you've been at San Diego Triathlon Challenge forever and ever and ever. And when we first started, it was, you know, I think Rudy was our only kid. Yeah, right? We had one. There he is over there. Now it's like, 150 kids? And when, as somebody who was, who's been dealing with this, with her challenges since she was a kid, seeing all these kids empowered at the ages of 2 and 3 and 4 and our parents learning what's possible, I'm guessing sometimes you stand there and go, "Man, this is awesome."
Totally. I mean, I just got the chills when you were talking about it, even, because what happens there is so transformative for the child with the disability. But I think as I've gotten older, too, I have so much appreciation for the transformation that happens for the parents at that event. You know, and for me, I know I went to school every single day, and I was the only kid in my entire school that wore a prosthetic leg, and that can be incredibly isolating. I mean, there wasn't even another kid in my school that was using a wheelchair, anything that you could visibly see. There were other kids, of course, that had challenges that were more invisible, but it was pretty isolating to feel like the only kid in the entire school, not alone, you know, let alone your class or in your grade. So that was pretty hard. And so I can just see that for these kids that come to the San Diego Tri Challenge that weekend, you know, many of them have that same experience that I did. In their schools, they're the only kids strapping on prosthetic legs to go to and from school. But once they come to this race weekend, when they come to the San Diego Tri Challenge, they're connecting with all these kids that are just like them. And that experience is so important because, you know, that gives them the sense that they're not alone in the world. They can talk to each other about and relate to each other with things that they can't talk about with their other classmates. And, you know, that can help sustain them when they go back to school. A, they know that they always have these friends. And nowadays, like, they have technology where they can actually keep in touch, you know, text messaging and Facebooking and all this. I mean, I remember for me, that was one of the things that I was so attracted to in sport, especially disabled sport. When the first time I went to the Paralympics as a track athlete, I was 17. But along the way getting there, going to those track meets with other people with disabilities, it was so awesome to finally connect with other people like me. But the problem was when I went back home, I mean, my parents were like, "We cannot afford to do long distance calls." I mean, that's when long distance calls were expensive, right? So, but now those kids get to connect at San Diego Tri Challenge. And, you know, I see, I'm friends with a lot of them on Facebook. I'm friends with their parents on Facebook. And you can see that they're still connecting and motivating each other. And it's pretty awesome to see. And they're growing up. And it's amazing to see now these young teenagers and young adults and college kids that they're becoming. It's pretty awesome.
Well, I had a mom come up to me a couple years ago at San Diego Triathlon Challenge. And, you know, a lot of times when you're putting on an event, you're just thinking about the logistics. And this mom comes up and goes, she had tears in her eyes. She goes, you guys don't realize how special this is. For 364 days a year, you know, we live in Omaha, you know, and there's not another challenge athlete there. For 364 days a year, my son's looked at as a freak. But here, he's like everybody else. And sometimes I think we lose sight of that, how important that is. So one woman who really connected with you was Scout Bassett. A fellow single above knee amputee, came to this country when she was seven and was adopted by a family in Michigan. And it seems like from talking to her, when she met you, it was like, okay, this is me a few years later. How important was that connection, not just as athlete to athlete, but woman to woman?
You know, I think, again, I was, it's like, for me, it's the continuation of the Patty story.
Yeah.
Patty was my role model as an athlete.
Yep.
And as a woman, you know, when I looked at Patty, she had, you know, a master's degree. She had a husband. She had a job and working in Manhattan and, like, you know, working really hard. And I think Scout perhaps saw a similar role model in me.
Yes.
And so so I think that's cool. And in many ways, I'm very proud that I've blazed that trail. And I hope in some way maybe maybe I've made it a little easier for her. You know, she didn't have to wait 20 years to get signed by Nike, right?
That's right. Yes, she's a Nike athlete now, too.
Mm-hmm.
Love that.
So
good for you.
Yeah.
Hey, Sarah, always, always a pleasure. Now, when are the Paralympic trials for triathlon?
Well, you have a point system as well, too. So we race through till June 30th, and that's when they'll make their final announcements. The next race that I'm doing for the ITU series, well, I've applied. I don't know if I will get selected to go. That's in March.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, I will be racing in Southern California at the Desert Tri.
Oh, nice. In March.
In the first weekend in March. So so that will be a fun local race. To get my the cobwebs out and they get fired up for the next thing.
Love it. Sarah, thank you so much for taking time. Always a pleasure to chat with you.
Thank you so much, Bob. Have a beautiful evening.
Sarah Reinerson has been our guest. Again, we are brought to you by Ironman U, RunCatalina.com, EverySite.com, our Challenged Athletes Foundation, where Sarah has helped us raise over $70 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life. Check out any of our interviews on Babbittville or on iTunes. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.